Welcome back to episode 7 of the Verde Podcast. Every week we talk to local business leaders and entrepreneurs to understand the real story that doesn't make it to the spotlight, but is how actual businesses are actually built here in Chicago. Today we have Kevin Cody, who's the founder of Agilux. I've known Kevin for many, many years. We've intersected in a couple different ways, and it's been fun to watch how his product has grown, because I've always been impressed. So welcome, Kevin.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Glad to connect.
I appreciate we could get together again.
Yes, it's always a good time to catch up with mm-hmm. someone who knows the pitfalls and glories of running a business, right?
It's always fun.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about Agilux and what you guys do as a business today, and why and how you started the business.
Sure. In 2014, I happened to be at a trade show for lighting and some other products. And for several years prior to that, we had been selling and represent manufacturers of different products. And we just had a real heart for the design process, for helping manufacturers bring their product to market. I have a background in retail as well as in manufacturing, and so I enjoyed just seeing the whole development process and bringing a product to market. And we were representing manufacturers' products and bringing them to market, and realizing that the manufacturers were really benefiting from our experience. And we decided that it was just time for us to go out and develop our own and really get into the product development process, and then own it all the way from start to finish. And so happened to be at a trade show and stumbled upon a product that I thought I would really enjoy potentially developing some derivatives of. Began a conversation with the product development manager who happened to be there in the booth. We ended up talking in the booth for about an hour about all the different options that they offered as a company, the variety of products that they did. I knew them from a previous industry and always had great respect for them. But the product that they were introducing to me seemed to be a little bit too commercial or a little bit too utility-oriented. And it wasn't a direction that we saw ourselves going. So I said, he actually asked us if we'd be interested in selling the product for him. And I said, this really isn't something that we think we would do very well for you at. There are other people who play in this sandbox that would probably do much better. And, but it's an interesting product. And I think that there's a residential or a DIY version of this product that could at some point happen that it'd be really interesting to have. And if that opportunity presents itself, we'd love to talk to you further about it. And at that, he invited me back to the company and invited me into their product development lab.
Wow.
And at the time, it's a major electronics company. Based here in the Chicagoland area. And at the time, I thought, wow, this is a neat opportunity because I'll really get to see what a huge company does in the lab. And so they said, we have this product that we think has merit, but we really don't have a direction for it. And we want to be in the LED space, LED lighting space, because we know that's important for all the peripheral products that we make, and want to be involved in this. But it's basically, it's just a lab. And so we're not sure exactly which direction we're going to take this, but it's a unique solution. So we looked at it for probably 4 or 5 months and began to develop, just because of experience, some market concepts and possibilities. Began to talk to people about it, looked at all the options that we could potentially use in the product. And so we regenerated the discussion probably 4 or 5 months later and came to the conclusion that there were real opportunities for it and we wanted to pursue it.
So describe, fast forward to today, describe the product that came from that initial meeting and what you guys sell today.
Yeah, sure. The brand is Agilox, mm-hmm. and it is an LED module. And there's a lot of different forms that LEDs take today, but this is something that can be magnetically attached to a power source and then distributed in a variety of ways. And it can be moved around, and it's a super low profile. It is totally different than anything else that's on the marketplace today. And it is something that's very flexible to work with from a product development standpoint.
It's fun. Yeah, so we're looking at a few of your, you've got a couple different in this conference room that we're chatting in. And it's funny that I've seen it since the beginning and how it's kind of evolved, and it's beautiful. And something we obviously, you know us and people listening may not, but sure. My company actually installs LED lighting for commercial right. customers. And I obsess over the size of LEDs. I do, from like a logistical standpoint of how do you get it from the first point of manufacturing to keep the, you know, the environmental impact of shipping low, warehouse space low. You can actually deliver a lot more products to an individual customer when it's, and your product hits all those better than actually any of the product we buy right now. Mm-hmm. So it is a beautifully designed, low profile product. Mm-hmm. And I know, anyways, and then tell us a little bit about, I know from, I've heard some anecdotes that like through beauty supply stores are really taking off, and some of the larger, I guess, retailers you say would have those kind of like booth setups are really taking off. So tell us about that.
Yeah, sure. We intentionally began to develop the product towards some non-mainstream lighting markets, channels, because we felt like we wanted to build a strong base of potential customers, do field tests and things like that before we introduced it to the mainstream market, because the profile of the product is such that it really is unique to handle. And for an end consumer that walks into a DIY store today, they pick up a light bulb and screw it into their socket.
Yeah.
This is something that's totally different. It's very safe. It works identically in terms of the connectivity of the product, but it is not something that anybody would just intuitively use in their home. And so we wanted to develop applications for it where people would get accustomed to it, that contractors would be able to install it, use it, and be comfortable with it, that we could use those experiences for developing the DIY market in the future. And so three that we picked to start with were the exhibit industry, the exhibit building industry typically uses a lot of unique applications, and they also need really low profile and product. And my history prior to starting the company was in manufacturing, selling, and actually purchasing through a major retail as a buyer at a major retailer, track lighting. And so I had a sense of where this could be used in those applications where track lighting was being used today, and it was similar.
Yeah.
And so it was natural for me to be able to go toward that market.
Yeah.
And exhibit industry is actually very large, and it is something that could build a nice base of business. So we started there.
What you know, it's funny. What strikes me about your experience, and I've known you for a long time, is that when I was through my early startup days, a lot of the teaching is around build a mobile product. You know, it's mostly software. Build something that's very minimal. Interview a lot of customers and adapt it. And I used a lot of that in interviewing and building our business model. Mm-hmm. You know, I was very open. I didn't have a lot of plans, and it worked in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. It's challenging, and you have one benefit I found is that I always wanted to stay in one space, so it never pulled me out of sustainability because that was what I was focused on.
Yeah.
But you're one of the rare ones that I've met where you almost saw a vision, and it sounds like it's from your experience, you know, being a buyer for so long, that you saw a vision for the low profile. And we were talking a little bit earlier before we started the podcast about how the 24 volt, it's kind of come around to be popular mm-hmm. in the last 6 months, and you saw it years ago. So mm-hmm. I just wanted to notice that you're different than a lot of the entrepreneurs that I interview. And it's you're singularly focused, and it's the market's coming to catch up to you, which is
mm-hmm.
cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been very fortunate to be able to have a partner in the electronics side
sure.
that knows the same stuff
yeah.
and had a lot of forward vision built into the product.
Well, you've
to get us to this point,
and you've got some patience too. You know, mm-hmm. you've not. I often think that a lot of my friends who have started a business and kind of moved on, sometimes I just think if they gave it another couple of years, mm-hmm. not everyone has that luxury in their life to do that. And that's not also the same story that, like, if someone's listening now and they just have an idea and run with it for 20 years, it doesn't mean it'll work.
No.
There's a lot of things that go on, but patience is definitely a big part of it.
Perseverance and a vision.
Yeah.
And I think the vision is really what has kept us focused on continuing with this, because there's been several times along the way that we said, is this really worth developing and spending and investing our saved income on? So, yeah, absolutely.
So go if you don't mind, expand a little bit on that. Like, what was the most challenging time you've in the 4 or 5 years you've been with Agilux for you personally? What do you find to have been the point where you're like, I'm not sure this is worth keeping at? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, there's several pieces to the puzzle. And recognizing your strengths and weaknesses and surrounding yourself with people who are going to be able to support those both sides is really critical. And recognizing where the product has real opportunity and where it doesn't, and then balancing cash flow with the requirements of product development. And we have a business already, you know, generating the cash that we need. So do we take money out of that business and put it into Agilux? And do we continue to invest in Agilux for the future? As we talked about very early on, I had a vision for developing a product that we would be able to modify our current model of business with and really have something that would build equity into a company. And that's where we continue to go back to it. Whenever we have a challenge or a question about what we're doing, is this right for the long term, and is it continually worth reinvesting in?
So you really serve almost like your own angel investor. Your existing business kind of funds the development and the research and the growth of Agilux.
Absolutely.
That's cool.
So we're working two jobs at once.
Yeah, well, I'm sure not. I'm sure you're working twice as hard, which is, you know, that's part of the game.
Yeah.
So
it'd be nice at some point in time to have a real investment partner to come along with, but all the while you have to be developing a company that people are going to see a value in.
Yeah.
And we didn't think that we'd be able to get there. In some ways, the product itself is so far out that some people would not be able to grasp it. And unless they really see the revenue that it could generate, they're not going to get behind it.
Yeah, really an investment partner definitely comes with strings attached.
Yeah.
And it sounds like patience isn't always one of those.
No. So. In this world, too, there's some big players.
Yeah.
And they're constantly, from a regulatory standpoint, as well as just a technology standpoint, always putting up roadblocks to prevent smaller guys from coming in.
Yeah.
And so we realize that and need to have that perseverance and the vision to keep us going.
Yeah, we talked about that. The DLC category of energy efficiency is probably just one of those ways that the big firms encourage to stop smaller firms from coming in with new products. So, what are some of your favorite parts of running Agilux?
Realistically, I love product development. I love, it's kind of like building a house. You buy the sticks, you have a plan, you start to put them together, and in the end, hopefully, if you've built it on a strong foundation, you will have something that you can call your own for a long time. And that's the favorite part for me is taking a product from a raw beginning all the way through the end and using the experiences that we've had tremendously wonderful opportunities with throughout our business life into developing the product, into developing the package, into learning how to communicate visually to consumers in a way that makes the product appealing. And as different as it is, giving people a comfort level with their use of the product. And so seeing all that come together is really what excites me and keeps me going.
How many different products have you developed at Agilux? How many different individual?
Well, the core of the product is really the modules.
Yeah.
And so those have not changed at all. We can always tweak the colors. We can always change the lumen levels, the characteristics of the electronics a little bit. But essentially, it's a modular LED, and it's always going to be that way. And that's what Agilux means, agile light. And so I don't ever see it being a product that has a whole lot of variation to it. It's a question of how do you mount it differently? How do you house it differently? And are there applications where you need to modify those things to accomplish the objective of whatever you're lighting? And so the core of the product, the LED modules, will stay the same. I don't see that changing, but we have tons of opportunity and the other mounting options and form factors.
I see
housing.
I see one of those sitting here on the desk, the grow light.
Yep, so that was the third market we went after, which was grow lights.
And that's indoor growing facilities, and I'm sure the marijuana boom has probably provided some opportunities.
You know, interestingly enough, those growers have their ideas of how they want to grow product and have had some history with particular types of lighting that is going to grow their product better or best. And they're just like anybody else. You know, change is not something they feel comfortable with oftentimes. LEDs are changing that in a big way from an energy saving standpoint, obviously.
Yes.
But and also the ability to tune the LEDs to modify a package of LEDs that is going to give you the best opportunity to grow the product the fastest.
Because the plant doesn't need visible light, right? It needs different wavelengths, the blues and the reds.
Right.
I remember you probably know that better than I do. But do you have products that you take out the visible light and you, or do you?
Yeah. So our product is designed around the spectrum between 450 and 660 nanometers, and that is where plants typically like to grow. You could go above that, and many will grow at 750 nanometers. And depending on the type of plant, microgreens, for instance, want to grow or like it on the lower end of the spectrum, and flowering plants like it on the upper end of the spectrum, so more red as opposed to more blue with a microgreen or something like that. So there is the ability with our modules to be able to create the environment where people can grow exactly what they want with really great affordability, as well as design their own to their liking, depending on the type of plants they're growing.
Yeah, that's great for the indoor gardener, for sure.
Yeah, and it's a nice low profile.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, it's not obtrusive in any ways or obnoxious in any way. And it's easily mountable in a lot of different variations. So depending on what you're growing, where you're growing it, and how you're growing it, those are all important things to everybody.
Right.
So we have a lot of different variations that can be done with that.
Yeah, you almost opened up an opportunity for like everyone to have a residential basement greenhouse.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I start growing. I'm a big gardener, and I've always started to try to grow seedlings inside. And they always do fine. You know, they get the moisture right, and they get to a certain size. And I never, in the Chicago March, you leave it close to the window, and they'll die. I'm actually going to pick one of these up and give it a shot. So I'll let you know how it goes. We'll get a follow-up podcast in a year.
Fantastic.
And talk about how the garden turned out.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your experience in making sustainability a priority within your business. And obviously your product is a sustainable product. LEDs there's no doubt. It's pretty mathematical and it's hard to argue. But what about like internally? I saw a little bit of your warehouse. Mm-hmm. You guys had a much better inventory system than ours, which I'm gonna go back and take some notes about. Tell me a little bit about how you find prioritize that within your own business.
Well, the people that we're doing business with, because the product, some of the product components are made in China, we have somebody in our QA within our China suppliers looking at all the things that those companies do to minimize any types of pollution that or environmental issues that they might have. So there's a pretty broad, long list of things that we look for in suppliers that are going to qualify them in a way that we feel best suits our company vision, as well as just the total sustainability of the product from start to finish. And that's our power supplies, it's our packaging, it's our labeling, it's everything. So we have a combination of suppliers from China to the U.S., and all of those are looked at the same way and held to the same standards. And I think we have surrounded ourselves with suppliers that do the best job that they can at doing that.
How do you weigh... I struggle with this personally, which is why I'm asking. But how do you weigh? Do you always ship by boat when you ship products from China, or do you air freight?
No, actually, most of ours is at this stage air freight.
Yeah,
and
it's light, small.
Yeah,
which is exactly why I brought that up earlier. Yeah. That's a big consideration for us. So.
Yeah, you know, one of the decisions for a core component of the product is the aluminum extrusion. Mm-hmm. One of the decisions that we made early on was that we could tool the product almost anywhere if we wanted to. We chose to have dual tooling in China and in the U.S. When we set up the aluminum extrusion that the module is magnetically attached to. And when we did that, set up the cost analysis of what it was going to be doing it in China versus doing it here in the U.S., and preferably in the Midwest specifically. And so we, in the process, discovered that, in fact, while labor costs are less expensive in China, you have freight, you have duties, you have all the other things that go along with the movement of the product from one factory location to another, potentially for different milling operation or painting or whatever. And discovered that we could move to a facility in Wisconsin called Crystal Finishing that does the aluminum extrusions, mills, and paints all under one house. And they're one of the best suppliers in the entire United States. And while the costs were a little bit higher, we could actually save money and freight and fuel and everything else by using a domestic supplier for the extrusion. So that's an example.
Yeah. I have 2 points that I'll bring up, but the shipping, the first point is the shipping is really hard for a growing business like both of us have, mm-hmm. to be patient and wait for something to take an extra month to get to you.
Yeah.
Even if it's cheaper that month, or it can get stuck in customs. Yeah. You know, UPS is pretty good at getting things by air. But it does kill me to do that. And we do about 50-50, and we're really trying this year to push more towards boat, because even though mm-hmm. it is cheaper, we can buy more in volume, but also the environmental impact is much smaller if you ship via freight by boat. But the other thing, and I just went to Shenzhen for the first time in November, and I know you've been to China many times mm-hmm. in your career, and I just have this really crystal clear vision, and maybe we can partner on this in a couple mm-hmm. of years, but of an aluminum can getting used here in Chicago and recycled and down to pure element and then fed into a 3D printer to print a housing. Mm-hmm. And while it sounds so futuristic to see all of, we'd have to recycle that can here to ship to China, you know, as gas increases in cost and, mm-hmm. and from an environmental standpoint, I hope it does, that cost increases. And so the cost to do it locally here really does mm-hmm. go down. Mm-hmm. And so, for me, it's always been a challenge of inventory and how do you predict the future of what you need, and to be able to print something or really manufacture it much more in a lean model here in the U.S., which we haven't had we just never have been good at.
Yeah.
The 3D printing model is compelling, especially with the LED that really just has a housing, a driver, and a mm-hmm. diode, you know, mm-hmm. the three major parts. So.
Yeah. You know, the couple of good points there is the fact that a 3D driver would or 3D printer would allow you to create unique designs. So if you wanted to be the Pinterest of LED lighting,
right.
you could do that pretty easily. The other thing is looking at the difference between boat and air freight also depends on the growth stage of your business. And we're at a point where a big spike in business could wipe us out. And that was of inventory. And that was why we chose to keep and stay with the tooling in both locations. And so far, we've been using Crystal Finishing exclusively and benefit from the ability to cut our lead times down.
Oh, yeah.
And significantly. And our,
you could drive up there and pick it up if you had to, right?
I did the last order.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
And also the inventory levels by being able to turn our inventory a little bit faster. So.
And people don't, I mean, you know, I know you go to Wisconsin, but people don't appreciate how much is still made in Chicago. Mm-hmm. You know, the breadth of it and the variety and Chicago still got a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are still, you know, best in class in many different factors when it comes to manufacturing. Mm-hmm. So I spend a lot of my time going out and visiting a lot of manufacturing in Chicago, and there's still a lot that's going on. So.
Oh, there's a ton of lighting component manufacturers in the Midwest here, and particularly in the Chicagoland area. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, I've, as always, enjoyed talking with you and hearing your story, and got to learn a little more about it. So thanks for being here.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks, Jamie.
All right. Take care, Kevin.